Welcome back to the second hour of Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, your host, and we'll be having Ed Vosburgh come in anytime soon to join me for the second hour. Looking forward to talking to him. I haven't talked to him in a long time. It's been a while. You know, he used to play here with the Tucson Toros back in the day when I was a young, thin man. I am no longer that young, thin man.
You look thin to me.
Yes, relative to other people, yes. But I am not thin like I used to be. You know, my nickname, we talked about this before, skinny in Spanish, yes.
Si.
El flaco.
You know,
flaco? Flaco.
That doesn't sound
very bad. Very thin. I can't tell you. Well, you know, a lot of donuts like we have here and stuff like that.
Did you have one?
Yes, I had one.
Attaboy.
One, yeah. So now I have to go to that 5K that Judy will have at her. Other thing.
Yeah, you said you even have a walker picked out or something?
Yes. We'll see how fast I go.
You ran when you were back in the day, you were
yes,
saying?
Yes, I was a sprinter.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Sprinter.
So what'd you do the 40? They didn't have a 40 then, did they?
No,
they
did 100, 200 in relays, 440.
Seven,
but this is not about me. This eight. Is not about here. We're going to talk about spring training once Eddie calls or Ed calls. You're Eddie. Anyway, I hope he remembers those good old days of Little League.
Otherwise,
I think he's going to call in because he may have taken – GPS doesn't find this place very well. It just doesn't. And I think he's coming in, but he's going to call in first. And we'll hear from Ed anytime soon. I think he's on the phone now. Yes, and Bob's, you know, I guess setting dinner plans with Ed right now. Is that Ed? Yes? Ed, how are you? Ed Vosburgh?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing, Steve?
Fine, thank you. Are you still driving in?
I am still driving in.
Okay, you took a left in Albuquerque.
Good old Tucson. Directions.
Yeah, GPS is not the way to find this place, but cool.
Crazy.
Just you'll find it. Hey, good to have you on the line for now. Thanks for joining me. A longtime guy who's a Tucsonan and been here forever outside of his time with the major leagues, 10-year veteran. Tell me, I guess they start reporting the major leaguers, pitchers and catchers. What kind of day is it for you guys when you showed up?
You know, it's exciting. You know, you feel like a little kid in a candy store. You know, you got the mowers out cutting the grass, the smell of the grass, and you get to put on your brand-new uniforms. And, you know, there's nothing like the smell of a brand-new Rawlings glove. It's just – you just feel like a little kid again.
So tell me, as a rookie or as a younger player when these days came up, how different were they when you were a KG veteran coming to these days?
Well, you know, as a kid, when you're growing up and you have all these idols that you look up to, I was a big Willie Mays fan. I loved the San Francisco Giants, you know, and then when I remember going to my first big league spring training, you know, it was exciting. I was seeing the likes of Steve Garvey and Goose Gossage and Greg Nettles and Gary Templeton. And, you know, I was lucky enough to play with Craig Lefferts, who was a former Wildcat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just exciting because all the guys that I looked up to as a kid, I was finally kind of rubbing elbows with, and it was just like a kid, you know, kid, just like a dream come true.
Did you fanboy it too? Like, you know, did you kind of say, I'm here with this dude. It's one of my all-time great guys.
You know, you don't want to try to be too awestruck because, you know, you're trying to compete for a job with some of these
sure.
older guys.
Sure.
But, you know, sometimes, you know, it's crazy. I remember as a kid, when we went to the Little League World Series and we had our banquet, we had Dick Genberg was the NBC host, and he came, and we had Reggie Jackson. The Oakland A's won those three championships a row in the 70s. And, you know, I got a chance to meet Reggie Jackson as an 11-year-old kid. And then, you know, later on in his career, I ended up facing him in a spring training game, and I look it up, and I've got Reggie Jackson in the box. And I, you know, for a second there, I had to pinch myself, and, you know, it was really cool. I ended up striking him out, and I'm thinking, man, I struck out Reggie Jackson, one of the greatest home run hitters of all time. So it was really cool.
Yeah, no, and you have these great memories that you could talk about, you know, that you went up against these guys or were teammates of these great guys, and what a fantastic life. At least a guy like me would kind of say, well, wow, you know, because you grow up dreaming about this stuff.
You know, I had hoped when I was an 11-year-old kid and we were lucky enough to go to the World Series and, you know, little team from Cactus Little League and playing with the Carrions and the Pagnazzis and all these other kids that, you know, we had some really good talent. We had a couple other guys that made it to the big leagues, Mark Kerrion, Tom Pagnozzi. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I dreamed as an 11-year-old kid, I always wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, and I always wanted to be an Arizona Wildcat, and I was lucky enough to play with Mark Wing as a 12-year-old, whose dad was Jim Wing, and and I knew then and there as a 12-year-old, because he had just gotten the job as a pitching coach at the U of A, I knew I wanted to be a Wildcat when I was 12 years old, and, you know, it was a dream come true for me when Jerry Kendall came into my house and offered me a scholarship and said, I want you to be a Wildcat. I was just thrilled to death.
Right, right. No, no, no. I was going to ask you, how was it playing for Jerry?
You know, it's interesting. That's a great question, Steve. You know, when I was a kid at the U of A as a freshman, you walk in, you see Terry Francona and Johnny Moses and Craig Lafferts and Wes Clements and Clark Crist, all these great players. I think everybody was in awe of Jerry Kendall. He's a 10-year major league player, and here I am, a young guy. You know, and as time went on, you know, he was the greatest guy in the world to play for. He always had a great attitude. He was just such a smart guy. And, you know, he had so much success. And, you know, it was so sad when he ended up passing away last year. And you know, he became a true friend of mine, and I had some ups and downs throughout my career, and I could always call Jerry and always call him, and he always had great advice for me, and I really considered him a true friend.
Yeah. I'm hoping you find your way here, because I want to see you in person, but let me ask you, I'm going to throw some questions at you that'll be kind of odd, but who do you remember the toughest guy you faced as a 11, 12-year-old locally?
You know, locally, it just, you know, once I learned how to throw the curveball, you know, it seemed like that was my equalizer. And it's a funny story, because I remember the coaches talking when I was about ready, when I was trying out for the team as an 11-year-old. And I remember the coaches talking, and they were saying, I overheard them. And Harry Unger said to Ralph Lanick, who was our coach, should we teach this kid how to throw a curveball? Because if we do, when he's a 12-year-old, he's going to come back and beat us. Because Ralph Lanick's Oscars Electric team, his team always won the championships. And as a 12-year-old, you know, my little league team had never won. And the next year we ended up being undefeated and we beat his team. So it was like prophetic for him. But, yeah, you know, Pagnozzi was a great hitter in little league. And Mark Kerrion, who I played with on the same little league team, I used to watch that kid and he never struck out. He's a great contact hitter. And, you know, then he goes on to become a Major League Baseball player. And we grew up two streets away from each other. So that was really cool to see, you know, two kids from the same neighborhood make it to the big league.
Right. And you pitched, I think did you pitch in the semifinals of the World Series?
I did.
You threw a one-hitter.
I threw a one-hitter. We played the first game. We beat New York, a team from Colony, New York. And then in the second round, we played a team from Birmingham, Michigan. And, you know, we were on a roll. Our pitchers were just throwing shutouts, and Mike Fimbers was our other lefty, and we just happened to, I think we threw like four shutouts in a row going into the final game. And, you know, it's an interesting story, because Mr. Lanick had seen Taiwan play, and he didn't want us to be intimidated, so he didn't want us to see them play, because they were just head and shoulders above anybody else, and obviously the age discrepancy came about. But, you know, we could compete with anybody until that day when we faced the great Taiwan team, and basically we had no chance. That pitcher was like a major league pitcher.
Right, right. Head and shoulders, indeed. Weren't they? Head and shoulders in age and in height, probably.
You know, and what's interesting about it, Steve, is, you know, we got to pal around with all the kids because we all stayed in barracks, you know, close to each other, and we saw the Taiwan kids, and, you know, we would kind of almost, we shared a bathroom and saw them. And I'm looking at these kids and going, these kids are shaving at 11 and 12 years old. And I thought really something was a little strange when I saw that.
Yeah, no question. Have you gone back since? And this might be a dumb question. I'm sure you have, but no? Yes?
Go back
to the World Series just to watch as a fan?
No. I really would love to go back. I watch it on TV every year, and it just brings back incredible amount of memories. And, you know, it's incredible that the size of the kids nowadays. We had one kid that was a pretty good sized kid. He was our catcher. His name was Gerard Pajisa. Besides that, we were all kind of squirrely little kids, and And then nowadays, you see these kids, 11 and 12, they're like 6 feet tall. It's just crazy.
Yeah, no, no. Back in the day, too, because you're a little bit older than me, but the Bad News Bears movie came out like in 75, 76. You must have loved that stuff.
You know, any baseball movie, the baseball movies, my wife and I, it's funny, we just watched The Rookie the other day and you know, with Dennis Quaid. And,
yeah.
And she's looking at me and my wife, KK, and she's like, is this a true story? And I kept saying, babe, do you believe this guy was a teacher and he ended up becoming a major league pitcher? It's really, there's so many great baseball movies out there. Kevin Costner's made some great baseball movies. And, you know, Kevin Costner's made a lot of great sports movies. Tin Cup is like one of my favorite movies. But, yeah, I love all the baseball movies out there.
Right, right. So we're going to take a break here. Hopefully we'll see you soon or stick on the line. Hope you find your way here. So we're going to take a break here and hope to see
okay.
you soon. 10:30
okay.
here on The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back to Eye on the Ball. We're talking with Ed Vosburg here on Eye on the Ball, here on 10:30 The Voice. Ed, I wanted to, so I asked you who the toughest guy you faced in Little League. What about college?
You know, I was fortunate to play against Barry Bonds a lot throughout my career. And, you know, Barry was a freshman when I was a senior at the U of A. And I knew that, you know, when he was a freshman at ASU, he was going to be a star. I also faced Mark McGwire in college, and I faced Oda B. McDowell. And
wow.
There's been as a baseball, you know, when he went to Stanford, he played baseball. And, you know, fortunately I had it because I was left-handed. He was left-handed. So I had a pretty good, you know, streak against left-handers. But, yeah, there were some great players along the way. And, you know, McGwire was just amazing in college, and we knew he was going to be a star in the big leagues.
Right, you threw some big-time names out there. And in the pros, let me kind of just give you a resume real quick. 10 years in the major leagues at a number of different places. One of only three players to play in the Little League World Series, the College World Series, the Major League World Series. You know probably the other two, right?
Jason Veritek was the second one, you know, the catcher with the Red Sox, and then also Michael Conforto, who played with the New York Mets, and went to Oregon State. He was the third one. I am the only pitcher. Jason, obviously, is a catcher, and then Michael Conforto was the third as an outfielder.
Yeah, very, very cool. How many times do you hear that trivia question?
You know, when we were going through the playoffs, he calls me up and says, you know, Eddie, he goes, you know, you could be the first guy to ever play in the Little League and the college and the Major League World Series. This is like when we were in the playoffs. I think we were playing the Braves to get to the World Series. And I was like, wow, that would be super cool if that happened. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, we beat the Braves and we're playing. And then, you know, then it became a trivia question. It's really kind of neat.
Now, who brought that up? You're breaking up a little. Who said that to you?
It was a friend of mine, Greg Theater, from grade school. We
oh,
went
okay.
to grade school and high school, and
sure.
You know, he was the first one to kind of figure that out.
Let me ask you just to go back just for a second. Do you still have the tapes from the Little League World Series?
You know what? It's awesome that you asked that. My dad used to, you know, tape stuff, and I never saw a video of the game, the final game, when we played against Taiwan. And then when I was playing in Philadelphia in 2000-2001, I got interviewed by a reporter, and she said, you know, I have the tape of the game.
Oh, cool.
That you played in. And I said, that's crazy, because I'd never even seen it. So I brought it home, and I made some copies and gave it to all the guys. And so now we got a copy of the final game.
And you played first base when you weren't pitching, correct?
I did, and Mike Fimbers and I we alternated. I would pitch, he'd play first, and then, you know, vice versa. And so, you know, it was pretty cool. We had two left-handers. We were very similar the way we threw. Our coach taught us, Harry Unger taught us the curveball, and, you know, that curveball was devastating to Little League hitters, and I was fortunate enough to be able to pick it up, and, you know, kind of the rest is history.
Did you, I think 10 years later, I can't remember, in that ballpark, Tucson sent another team to the World Series and did well. Did you meet any of those guys? Have you, you know, talked to
them?
You
know what? I didn't, but I always root for the kids because I remember how much of a thrill it was for me. And it was surreal to, you know, to win city and then go on to state and Phoenix and then go to San Bernardino and win. And, you know, back then you couldn't lose any games with single elimination. Now it's double. So we had a couple close calls along the way, but, you know, you got to be a little bit lucky, and we were fortunate along the way to win 12 games before we got to that final game.
Right, right. You talked about how it was to play for Kindle. How was it going to the U of A and having all that success as a team and then even personal?
You know, for me, it was just a phenomenal experience. I got a little bit spoiled winning the national championship as a freshman. And then, you know, my next 3 years at the U of A, we didn't do as well. But it was a great experience. I played with so many great players along the way and made a lot of great friends. And I ended up coming back for my senior year. And you know, it, unfortunately, we had the first losing season in 50 years as a senior. But, you know, I ended up winning 10 games and losing two as a senior and got drafted in the third round. That was the third time I got drafted. And, you know, I loved my time at the U of A, and I have a lot of fond memories of being a Wildcat.
It's funny, I use this line every now and again. When Arizona won the title in 97 in basketball, I remember Josh saying, God, see, we got this title in 97. We'll be back every year from now on. You know,
isn't that funny? Because I remember it was like yesterday because my Florida Marlins team won in 97. So it was kind of like, you know, it was just like a deja vu thing. We win the World Series. U of A basketball team, the only team time they've ever won a championship. It was just a great year for me and for the Wildcats.
And don't forget that the Chicago Bulls won the title that year with Kerr, Buechler, and Brian Williams.
Yes, and you know, I always hear the debate, you know, the LeBron comparison with MJ. And, you know, Michael Jordan was one of a kind. There'll never be another Michael Jordan. And, you know, those Bulls teams with Kerr and Buechler and Brian Williams, they were fun to watch, all those Wildcats.
Yeah, no question, with good guys. And well, Rodman, I'm not sure you could always categorize him, whatever kind of guy he was, but that was a pretty good team. And Michael Jordan, too, I'll pick Michael Jordan over LeBron for my money, at least.
Well, and the thing that I love about MJ is he tried to go play baseball, and he really proved to everybody how tough a sport baseball is. And
yeah,
you know, I looked at John Elway, who played baseball and football, and I think John Elway could have made it as a Major League Baseball player, but obviously he knew what he was doing. And football, he was a phenomenal quarterback, obviously a Hall of Famer. And you know, there's been some great two sport athletes and over the years, and you know, it's just great to see. I always encourage kids to do more than one thing, and club ball just drives me crazy because I think kids should play multiple sports until late in high school.
Yeah, no question. And I was going to ask you, you had the Deion Sanders and stuff like that, and I just lost my train of thought. But did you played more than just baseball, I guess, growing up as well?
You know what? I love things. I had an older brother, Dave, who introduced me to a. I had a brother who's 13 years older than me, and I have a brother also that's 15 months older than me. So I was the youngest of three, and my older brother, Dave, introduced me to all sports. I played three sports 1 year in high school. I played football my whole life. I was a quarterback, and I loved basketball, but I knew that eventually I was going to have to give up one because three sports was just way too much in high school. But I love sports. My son is 15 and he's a phenomenal little athlete himself. And, you know, I waited 42 years to have a son and he's kind of a chip off the old block. I think he might even be a little better athlete than I might be, but, you know, it's great. I mean, I just sports has been my whole life. And, you know, I really feel like, you know, I have a lot to give back to kids because I just really want to inspire kids to just to be the best that they can be.
There's a few of you. I had Audius, George Audius here maybe a month or so ago, and he's, you know, his kids playing at U of A. And so all you guys' kids are starting to hang out and maybe be recruited locally and otherwise.
You know, it's exciting. You know, I think I'm more nervous watching my own son Noah play. I was always nervous until that first pitch or until, you know, until the the game started, and then the nerves went away. But I think I'm definitely more nervous watching my own kid play.
Yeah, no question. He said the same thing, and I know what you were going through. I had the same issue when my son played soccer at Foothills, no question. And maybe this is the I thought I had real quick before we go to break, but the kid at Oklahoma, Murray, the quarterback, I'm sure you've seen him play quarterback, and he was a top pick last year, I think it was. Just your thoughts on how that would go.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story. I mean, he's a great baseball player. I saw him play football a little bit. I've never seen him play baseball, but I was amazed how short he is.
Yes.
I mean, I think he's only 5'8", but I just heard recently that he's going to try to play football. But I really think he might be better off playing baseball, but you never know. I mean, everybody, I look at, you know, the pitcher for the Giants, Marshrilla, who was a pitcher and a football player at Notre Dame, and everybody just, you know, wants to go where they're most passionate, and who knows, maybe he'll make it as a football player. You never know.
Yeah, and maybe just off topic, because we talked about him earlier this week or last week. Did you have a chance to face or see Jim Abbott pitch?
I did, and I actually was in spring training. Jack Howell and I played together at the U of A 1 year, and we also played with the California Angels together, and I went to spring training. And I witnessed Jim Abbott, and what a remarkable story.
Yes,
with that
very
with
much.
That hand. And I saw him get a hit in spring training. The guy could hit. You know, he only had obviously the one hand, and for him to transition and throw the ball and then put the glove on the other hand, it's just incredible throwing a no-hitter in the big leagues. He's an inspiration to kids all over there that think they have a disability. All they got to do is look at Jim Abbott and see the video of that guy, and He's just an amazing guy.
No question. We're going to come back on the other side, and I wanted to talk to you real quick about how difficult it is to become a major league baseball player. You know, everyone has that dream, but it's very few that are able to get there because of whatever they have that's something special. We'll talk about that on the other side. Thank you.
Okay, awesome.
We'll go back to break here at 10:30. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Talking with former major leaguer Ed Vosburgh here as the pitchers and catchers start to report for spring training. He went through a number of those years. Ed, how difficult, everybody has this dream as a kid. You did too. Heck, I did. I just couldn't hit the curveball, which, you know, but everybody wants to be a major league player. How difficult and where does it come from to become one?
You know, that's an awesome question, Steve. I mean, I look back at it, and when I was going through it, I want to tell you, there was many times in my life I wanted to quit because I was frustrated. I got to the big leagues at 24, and I remember pitching against the Cincinnati Reds on my birthday when I was 25 and gave up a home run to Dave Concepcion, his 100th home run of his career, and I got taken out in the second inning on my birthday, and I was like, what a bummer. But, you know, it was a dream of mine. I always thought, my little league coach, Ralph Lanick, told me when I was 11, he goes, son, he goes, you have an ability that not many kids have, and he goes, if you really want it and you really work, you got a chance to go really far in this game, but it's up to you. And I always remembered that, and I always had that in the back of my mind. And whenever, you know, I doubted myself, whenever things were going, you know, south for me, and when I wasn't getting the break I thought I would get, I always remember what Mr. Lanick said, and it always kind of drove me to, you know. And I had great parents growing up, and you know, unfortunately, they're both deceased, but they both got to see me play, and my dad was probably my biggest fan. But, you know, I always just believed in myself, and I think my faith really kept me going on the days when, you know, I was struggling, I had a bad day. And like I said, many days I wanted to quit, but there was always something inside me that said, you know, keep going.
Yeah, no question. And I've always said this in terms of success at the big time level, it's one thing to get there and all the hard work. It's even harder to stay there. And I'm sure talk about that, because late 80s, you must have been already, you know, along with your career. You came down to the Toros and had to spend some time down here, and then you kind of rejuvenated your career and then went back up.
You know, I my dad used to tell me, and I've actually started writing a book, and I've gone back and forth with it. He told me, son, you need to write a book about all your experiences, your ups and downs. And you know, I got to the big leagues, like I said, at 24, and then for 30 days, and next year, 7 days, and then not again for, you know, 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, I really didn't make a big league roster until I was like 34 years old. And I had to grind it out for a long time. And, you know, it was even sweeter when I made it, because I knew that all the work that I put in and the help of my faith, and I just, it meant so much more to me to make it later in life. And I know I appreciated it a great deal more, because if I would have made it as a 24-year-old and never looked back, I never would have appreciated it. But I appreciate life so much because of the work that you put in. And you know, it wasn't easy. And when things are difficult and when you finally achieve something that you dream about, it just makes it all the sweeter.
So when you were 34, who were you pitching for?
You know what? I got Rule 5 by the Dodgers in 1994. I was pitching in Mexico. Mike Brito, the scout that signed Fernando, signed me and saw me and decided to draft me to the Dodgers. And, you know, I go to spring training with the Dodgers. It was the strike year, and I didn't make the team. And you know, I got waived. Tommy Lasorda basically told me to my face that I couldn't pitch in the big leagues, and which really motivated me more than I ever was motivated. I wanted to prove him wrong, and I went back and I flew home from Vero Beach in Florida, and called my agent, and by the time I got to Tucson, as I landed, he had got me an opportunity with the Texas Rangers, and he goes, "I have some news and some bad news. The good news is, you know, I have a job. The bad news is you have to get Brett right back on a plane." And so I ended up going to pitch for the AAA team with the Texas Rangers. And, you know, I pitched once and I got up after one appearance after Tommy Lasorda told me I wasn't good enough. And, you know, and then I came in and faced Jose Vizquel and pitched against the Cleveland Indians, I remember, and got him out. And then the next batter was Carlos Baerga, and I got a hit, and it scored a run, and I'm thinking, God, is that chance to just go down the tubes? And then, luckily, the next day, I go out and throw three scoreless innings, and then, you know, I kind of proved to them that I could pitch, and then, you know, I was with them for 3 years, and during the third year was the year that I got traded to the Florida Marlins and went to the World Series, so I was fortunate enough to be in the right.
I'm losing you. Are you there? Uh-oh. I think we lost him. He's kind of still stuck in traffic somewhere or parked on the side of the road. We'll try to get back with him. But there's no question. It's difficult to get there and then to stay there. I know he's played for 8 different major league teams in a 10-year career. People die for a cup of coffee in the major leagues, as they say, for just going and playing for one team. And he played for 8 of them. What an odyssey of a career, but a great one, because people want to be there for a long time. Ed, we have you back?
Yes.
So you were talking about your Rangers and going to the Florida Marlins. Where do you have, I assume you have a ring.
I do.
Where do you have that?
You know what? I wear it because I'm actually, I never really wore my World Series ring. I mean, I'm very proud of it, but I've always considered myself, you know, a humble guy, and I didn't ever really want it to flaunt. I was lucky enough to get a College World Series ring, and I have 8 rings. I have a College World Series ring. I have a ring for my first year in AA, and then I also have 3 AAA rings, and then my Florida Marlins ring. And then the next year I actually got traded to the Padres, and we went to the World Series, and I have a World Series ring, even though we lost to the Yankees. So, and then my last year I played, I got a ring from playing in Mexico City. So I was lucky. I have 8 rings, and, you know, I'm proud of all of them. And I do wear my World Series ring. I got it sized again because it was too small, and my fingers got a little fat, but I do wear it now, and I'm very proud of it. And you know, it was a great experience.
Very cool, very cool. 10-year career, 8 different teams. I'm going to rattle off some of the cities, and tell me maybe how cool it was to be there. It's a tough life because you have to go here, there, here and there. Families. I had the same issue with traveling with the basketball team. I was gone a lot, but here at San Diego, San Francisco, Florida, the Marlins, with the Diamondbacks, Philadelphia, Montreal, Oakland, Texas, all over the country. What were some of your favorite places?
I would say my two favorite places. I love San Diego. Unfortunately, it didn't work out with me as a career there. I would have loved to have played my whole career like Tony Gwynn did as a Padre. My favorite place that I played the longest was in Texas. I loved Arlington, Texas. The Rangers treated me phenomenal. The humidity was pretty much unbearable at times. But you know what? I didn't care. I was in the big leagues, and I got a chance to travel, play in Wrigley Field, and I got a chance to play in Fenway, and you know, I got a chance to play some of the Hall of Fame. I got a chance to face Hall of Fame players and face Cal Ripken and face Roberto Alomar, Paul Molitor, and Albert Bell, and you know, and Barry Bonds, and you know, I gave up a home run to Barry, you know, when he was in his heyday, and you know, I was just, it's just a dream to be able to say you were there, and to, you know, for people to hear, oh, you're a trivia question. It was a dream come true, and I'm just very blessed to be able to do it.
Yeah, no question. I was an intern at the Dallas Morning News in 1987, and part of my job was to go to Arlington Park, and it was the summers were brutal, hot, humid. Pete Caviglia was on the team at that time, and Valentine was the manager. So it was the crazy time. Steve Howe?
Yes.
Howe was the pitcher. Yes. He was going through his issues at the time. That was, you know, 31, 32 years ago, a long time ago. So you were playing during that time.
Yeah, I got called up for the first time in 86, and then the last time that I played in a major league uniform was in 2002 with the Expos. You know, it's interesting, Frank Robinson just passed away, and I was telling somebody that they asked me about him, and I said, I got a chance to play for him in 2002. It was a short time, but I went into Montreal spring training in Jupiter, and I went as a non-roster player at 40 years old, and it's one of my greatest accomplishments, is I made a major league team at 40 as a non-roster guy, and Frank Robinson was my manager, and I thought he was, I heard some stories that he wasn't the nicest guy in the world, but I loved the guy. He was so gracious and just really treated me very, very well, and you know, my time with him, it was short, but I really have a lot of great memories.
It's funny you rattle off these experiences, and it's very funny in a like an ironic kind of way, where you remember probably every pitch you threw to Reggie Jackson. You remember every instance that you were out there on the mound, and it's what you guys do. I mean, athletes remember every moment.
That is so true, and you know, Steve, especially about my Little League year in 1973, it's crazy how long ago it was, but I remember vividly so many things about Little League. And when we went to the World Series, we had a game in the Western Regional Finals. I remember this like it was yesterday. I came up to bat in the first inning, bases loaded. This kid was throwing so hard, and he threw two balls by me. And then he tries to trick me and throws me a curveball, and I got a base hit up the middle. We win the game 1-0, and I ended up pitching that game, and we didn't play very well on defense, and it was like we were really lucky to win. And then the next day we're on our way to Williamsport, and we're going to the World Series, and we're one of eight teams. So it's just crazy how vivid Little League was to me, and how all these things I can remember.
Yeah, no question. You remember the defeats probably more than you do the victories, but those victories are fantastic.
You know, it is so true, and you know, I had a lot of great memories. I had a few heartaches, and you know, they are all part of the process, and you know, helps you grow as a, you know, I always look at it this way: you really can tell a person what kind of character they have by when they lose a game.
Mm-hmm,
You know, I look up to Roger Federer, and I look up to, you know, I one of my favorite people is Tim Tebow. He doesn't get enough credit as a great athlete and a great announcer, and you know, look at Tim Tebow might play Major League Baseball.
Right.
That's just a crazy story.
Yeah, it is. It is. That is fantastic. And you know how difficult it is to play the game. It's very difficult.
And you see the guy now. He looks like he's muscle-bound. I saw him. You know, he's a great inspirational speaker, and I would love to meet the guy. I think he's an awesome guy. But he looks like he's this muscle-bound kid, but he's got a great baseball swing. And I thought he didn't get enough credit as a quarterback. I mean, he beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in a playoff game. You know, and then he couldn't get a job. He's just a phenomenal guy, and he's a great role model. I always tell my son, Noah, that's the kind of guy you need to emulate, and that's the guy you should look up to, because that guy has character, and those, we need more guys like Tim Tebow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to take our final break here. We're talking to Ed Vosburgh and come back on the other side. We're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I on the ball, and I'm talking with former major leaguer, former U of A great Ed Vosburgh. It would be remiss of me not to ask you what you're up to these days in town now that you're back home.
You know, Steve, I was working with kids, and I actually worked with the Diamondbacks for six spring trainings in a row until Chip Hale got let go. He was kind of my connection. So unfortunately, I'm not doing as much involved with baseball as I would like. I started working with a place called D-Bats. It's a place, indoor facility. It's across from the Tucson Mall. I do lessons there, and I'm still involved with kids in that respect. But I started working for Jim Click Ford, and a friend of my wife suggested, you know, she said athletes, you know, are really good car salesmen because they have experiences. And I thought, what the heck? I've never sold anything in my whole life, and I thought I was going to give it a try. You know, I met Jim Click as a 9-year-old. I played in punt, pass, and kick, and I was lucky enough to win a trophy, and I met him. And, you know, he always remembered me. He was always really nice to me, and I thought, I'm going to reach out, and he hired me. And so I've been selling cars for him for the last 6 months, and I've enjoyed it. I work at the dealership on Wilmont Speedway, and it's been really a neat experience. It reminds me a lot of baseball. There's a lot of characters in the car industry, and you know what, it's been great because I got out of my bubble, and I'm doing something that I never thought I would do, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, great. One of the questions I ask the former athletes and coaches that I talk to on a daily basis, that's probably how you stay competitive too, because once you're an athlete and you've been to the top and you've been, you know, a competitive guy all your life, you kind of lose, or you don't lose those juices to compete. I'm sure sales or whatever you're doing now is part of that.
You know, you're very, very true. That's a great statement. I am very competitive. We play cards at home, and I don't like to lose in anything. My brother and I are incredible rivals. My brother, Joe, he used to beat me in everything when I was a kid, and then finally I caught up to him in size, and he contributed to really who I am, because he used to beat me like a drum, and it used to make me, you know, it used to make me mad, but it made me who I am, and you know, it made me, you know, want to be the best that I could be. And finally when I caught up to him and I got to be as big as he was, you know, my two older brothers, I give a lot of credit to my success in sports, because they really kind of molded me who I was, along with my great mom and dad.
Well, at what age, there's always that coming of age. At what age did that happen with you and Joe, where you kind of said, you know, I finally arrived and now I can finally get them?
You know, it was interesting, because when I was at South Point, I played for Jerry Stitt. He was our coach. And I remember my brother pitched a game when he was a junior and I was a sophomore, and he started a game, and unfortunately he walked the first three batters, and I ended up coming out of the bullpen and striking out the next three and pitched like four scoreless innings. And then I just became, that gave me great confidence to be able to pitch on the varsity as a sophomore. And, you know, then unfortunately my brother didn't pitch much after that until the next year when he was a senior. But you know, that moment when I came in and I bailed him out, and I felt bad for him, but, you know, that was the kind of the moment I felt like I belonged on the varsity as a sophomore.
Yeah, no, very cool. I'm going to kind of bounce around now. We have about 4.5 minutes left. Do you still see many of the guys that were on the Little League team? And not to, when I was at the Citizen and it was still alive, I did a Where Are They Now piece on the 85 team. I think it was 85. Do you know where many of the guys are from your time?
You know what? Well, I'm glad you asked that, because, you know, Facebook is an interesting thing. We thought that one of our guys that we played with, Billy Brower, we thought he was deceased because we had not heard anything about him. We have had some get-togethers over the years. We had a reunion for 40 years, and, you know, I think a couple guys have passed away, but it was great that I connected with Billy Brower. I hadn't talked to him in like 30-some years or something, and found out that he's been in the military, and it's just great. A lot of the guys I stay in touch with from time to time, like through Facebook and stuff, and you know, it's just great, because, you know, that was just a special year in our lives, and it's just really kind of cool, because every time Little League World Series comes around, we just kind of reminisce about 1973.
Sure, and I'm sure you have all the clips from the paper back in the day, you know, kind of glorifying those kids back in the day.
You know, my mom kept a scrapbook for me, and I have all that stuff back home. And, you know, my son is at the age now where he can kind of appreciate seeing what his dad did, because, you know, he came around when I was 42, and he never really got to see his dad perform. But, you know, the great thing about YouTube and video is he can go back and you know, show his buddies. And that's my dad. He's just a very proud son.
Yeah, now we have like less than 3 minutes. But I always ask the guys like you, what would you tell the younger Ed Vosburgh, you know, given your history now, you know, maybe some advice to him?
Follow your dreams and don't really let anybody tell you that you can't do something. Really believe in yourself. This is my message to all kids, and I love talking to kids, working with kids. I always tell kids each one of us has a special gift that we've been given, and it's up to us to find out what it is, to nurture it, to work as hard as we can at it, and to be special. And we all have something that we really can be great at. It's just up to us to figure out what it is and go for it.
Yeah, no, great, great. Well, thank you very much for being on, Eddie. Or Ed, my guy here who you've been talking to, Bob, said Eddie when you were a kid, and I'm saying Eddie. But Ed Vosburgh, what a fantastic career you've had. Welcome back home now that you're here for a while. Thanks for joining me.
You know, it was my pleasure, and, you know, I love listening to Sports Talk Radio, and you do a great job, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. You know, I might call upon you in the summer, in the dog days of summer. You know how those things are. We'll talk a lot about baseball. Have you on.
You know, I would love it. I love all sports, and I'd love to be a part of your show. I think, you know, you do a great job, and, you know, I always listen to you and the other guys on the local stations. It's
great.
It's fun.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on today, and next time we've got to get you in. That'll be the best.
I know. I'm definitely coming in next time, Steve.
Great. Thank you, Eddie Vosburgh.
All right.
Appreciate it. Well, there you have it, Bob. You had me calling him Eddie here for a second back in the young days of local baseball. What a great interview. I enjoyed talking to him. I remember talking to him 30-some years ago when he played for the Tucson Toros way back in the day when I was a young reporter going to the games when Mike Fitter was the GM. And a lot of fun, those monsoon days. I couldn't wait for monsoon days because it would cancel the game and I would have the day off. It was fun. Good day? Good day, Bob?
I didn't have my mic on. Very nice.
Yeah, very good day. I thought we had some good guests. Obviously, Ed Vosburgh, and then we had Judy McDermott talking about the upcoming Cola Guard Classic. You know what we're going to try to do? We still need to give tickets away for that big event tomorrow. I think we're going to hold some tickets for tomorrow to call in to a couple of people. We'll do that tomorrow before the big game, our match tomorrow with the Portland and Seattle group at Keno Park. So thanks for joining, everybody. Today's very nice show here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You'll now have John C. Scott right after me.